volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beats, to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
All right, everyone, I'm here with my very special guest, who's actually, I don't even know if I should say very special guest anymore, because like, at this point, why am I introducing you?
I'm in your fridge. I'm making sandwiches.
So I am here with...
I'm connected to the Wi-Fi automatically.
Yeah, you have the password. Yeah. Like, it automatically loads up when you walk in the house. It's Paul Bromley, everybody.
Hey. Oh, what's up?
Paul Bromley is obviously no stranger to the According to RP. In fact, our segments are now called, what is it, PBRP and PB?
Yes.
Yeah, yep. There we go. It's another RP and PB special.
Exactly. But, everybody, I'm glad to be back.
Yes, but for those of you who are new to the According to RP stage and are just like, who is this PB? Paul Bromley, just give a brief intro. At some point, you're gonna not have to do it, but you know, there are still new people tuning in every week. So, briefly, who are you?
I am a man who is tired right now, and I want to get the show started. I'm just joking. Hey, everyone, my name is Paul Bromley. I am an attorney here in New York City. I'm a former colleague and forever friend of Rita Pierre. I'm a writer, I'm a political commentator, I'm a father and a husband. I'm as I said on the first show, I'm black.
Very black.
And I am always happy to be here with Rita to share the platform and talk about some pressing issues. To most importantly, though, to laugh and to cuss. That's why I'm here. that's what I bring to the show. I bring the cursing. And tonight, I've brought a special friend also with me. The third guest host of this show is Jose Cuervo. Tonight's show is sponsored by Jose Cuervo. And who's your special guest, Rita?
My special guest tonight is Merlot.
Yeah, see, perfect.
Yes, Merlot.
Merlot is a very, and I love Merlot. Merlot is a highly melanated drink. It's a very dark skin.
Very dark and rich.
Yeah, I'm drinking a light skin Jose. I'm drinking the gold version.
Okay. Yes.
You guys are in for a special treat tonight.
It should be very interesting because me and Merlot, as some people might know.
Merlot.
Some people might know him as Merlot.
Yes.
You know, we have interesting chemistry. We have really good chemistry. So absolutely. I think you guys are definitely in. And Jose, although me and Jose are no longer really on speaking terms.
That's my nigga.
But Jose, anytime Jose pops up, the party, whether you like it or not, the party is starting.
We're all here and accounted for.
Yes. All right. So today's going to be a very interesting show. I mean, PB and I had some, you know, offline conversations, just to kind of, you know, make sure that we got our topics in order. So I think it's going to be a really interesting show. But, you know, before we get into the meats of the show, we always have our preliminaries. So it is now time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Pop it on fleek, you lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week. So this week's Urban Dictionary word of the week is sapiophobic.
But
what the fuck is that?
But before I go into the actual the Urban Dictionary definition of sapiophobic, I think it would be helpful to know what a sapiosexual is, because I think that will give more context as to the Urban Dictionary phrase. So this time I just did a general Google search, so I don't know if this is Webster's, Merriam, or dictionary.com. I don't know who it is. But sapiosexual is an adjective, or it could be a noun as well too, but it's basically of a person finding intelligence sexually attractive or arousing. And there's an example where I met a PhD student from Germany who told me that he was a sapiosexual. And so basically a sapiosexual is a person who finds intelligence sexually attractive or arousing more so than a person's like looks.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes. Yes. And so brief story though, as to, you know, how I first came across this term. It was a couple of years ago. I had met this guy who seemed to be an intellectual, but as time would tell, he really wasn't. But when me and him had a conversation, this is the term that came out of his mouth, and he was just like, I'm a sapiosexual. Like, I guess he was trying to be like deep. And I've heard this from other, like, since I've heard this from other guys, when they're trying to like be deep and try to, you know, set themselves apart, they use phrases like, I'm a sapiosexual, to kind of distinguish themselves. Like, yeah, I'm not into just like looks. Like, I'm into somebody's like intelligent. I find intelligence sexually arousing. Yeah, exactly. So,
I mean, that's true. That's a true thing. Intelligence is extremely attractive, but like,
it is. Yeah, but the other thing too was like, a part of me is just like, am I supposed to be insulted, or am I supposed to be like,
like I'm smart, but I'm bad as shit too.
You know,
like,
what I'm saying? Bad and bougie. Bad and bougie. So it's like, I don't know whether to take this as a compliment or be insulted at the fact that you're telling me you're a sapiosexual. But either way, that is the context behind. So you guys have a little frame of reference here. So the Urban Dictionary word is sapiophobic. So someone who is scared of intelligent people, perhaps because they are stupid. Example, me. So me being, I guess, the person. I'm like, the example says me, : dude, check out what this chick wrote in her Tinder bio. The friend says, I'm a sapiophobic. And then, I guess, me responds, what the fuck is that? Which is what a lot of people actually say. Like, right. What the hell is
me
that?
Me is me. Yeah.
Exactly. Me is me. I am me. I am me. But that is that's the word of the week, sapiophobic. But you know what? I found it interesting when I came across it. I was like, you know what? That will be the word of the week. As we are moving into cuffing season, we're moving deeper into cuffing season because the weather
niggas
outside.
Niggas will say anything to cuff.
Exactly. The weather outside is frightful. But I also find, though, that I guess if you're buying into this whole sapiosexual thing, there are a lot of guys out there who I would say are sapiophobic, right? I find that there are a lot, I mean, maybe women too, but you know, I always, you know, the men, you know, are the hunters out there. They're the ones actually grabbing and snatching. I find that a lot of guys don't want a woman who is, or act as if they don't want a woman who is super intelligent. I don't know if it's because they're actually dumb themselves, or because they don't want to be outshined, or it's an ego thing. But I feel like there is some teeth to the comb when it comes to the sapiophobic thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, one, I think it's a multifolded response here. One, yes, I do agree. There are a lot of dumb niggas out here. So, yes, that we can agree on. And then two, like, yeah, there are a lot of dudes who are like intimidated by like, you know, women who, you know, exude like a high level of like intelligence, because like, you know, if a woman is intelligent, you know, or if a woman like exudes like a certain level of intelligence, that also can equate to like a certain level of like self-confidence and independence and things of that nature. And unfortunately, you know, there are a lot of guys who like want a woman that they can control, like want a woman that they can like, you know, get inside of her brain or mentally, like, control her. And if a woman is too independent or too, like, intelligent, like, there are some guys out there who, you know, are completely turned off by that because they know that they won't be able to, like, control that woman. Or, you know, you can't talk a lot of bullshit or tell a lot of lies or be manipulative or, like, mm-hmm. spin, you know, a lot of shit, like, with a woman who actually knows, you know, what the hell is going on in the world, a woman who is, you know, intelligent. So, yeah, I think that there definitely are a lot of guys out there who are intimidated by, like, intelligent women. But my thing is, like, when you're with a woman who, you know, who lacks to, like, what do you talk about? Because I'm like, I enjoy, like, being able to have, like, fruitful conversations, you know, with women and, like, you know, like, when I'm with my wife, like, you know, I can sit down, we can have, like, intelligent, like, conversations about, like, you know, world issues, or we can go from world issues to Megan Thee Stallion. I feel we talk about Megan. We give Megan Thee Stallion a lot of play. She needs to cut out the check.
Let me tell you something. Damn. Megan Thee Stallion and City Girls get a lot of play on this
they
show.
Do. They really
they get
do.
A lot of play on this show. Where are their managers?
They we're, really do.
We're ready.
But, like, I just don't understand, like, why would you want to be with someone that you cannot, you know, engage with, you know, intellectually? I just don't understand that mindset, but that's just me.
I don't know. You know what it is? It's because they're getting that mental stimulation from either their female friends or the other women that they don't want to necessarily wipe facts, up.
Yeah.
They don't want to wipe them up, but they're good for a reason. You know, a lot of people like to compartmentalize the people in their lives. And I feel like women, like I said, you know, women do it too. You have certain men that you know.
Absolutely.
You talk sports with there are certain men. Yeah, I was gonna say
y'all
women
have men for y'all have a man to you know y'all have a man to you know pay the bills. Y'all have a man to come over and fix the damn light bulbs and y'all. You know what I'm saying? You got a man when the rent is late. You know you got a man when you just want to be intimate.
You know,
I'm treading lightly here.
That's the thing. I mean, listen, it's so true. Unfortunately, you know, and it's funny because the other day I was having this conversation with one of my girlfriends. You know, as much as I talk about, you know, yeah, I want that, I want this life, I'm not actually about that life. I could be very honest with myself and say I am not about the multiple individual life.
The rotation life?
The rotation life is not for me. I'll mess around and be found at the bottom of the Hudson because I can't get names right. Like I can't, I'll call you John when your name is Tim. Like that's just how I've done it before. So I know my weaknesses and limitations.
You gotta know your boundaries.
You gotta know your boundaries. But the other day I wasn't feeling well. And I was like, man, I wish I had somebody that could bring me some chicken noodle soup.
Don't tell me you called a nigga to bring you some chicken noodles.
I don't have a nigga to bring chicken noodle soup. I keep my.
You should always have a nigga in rotation for food, though.
I know, but food is important. I keep. You know what it is? I'm just so. I'm one of those people in my mind. I'm like, I'm not about to lose my dignity over some food.
But that's the thing about the rotation. The rotation is if you really are, you know what I'm saying. If you really like. You know, about your business, you know what I'm saying? You don't have to do anything in return for the food. You just get the nigga to trick on you with some food.
Nah, but that's the thing. For me, the dignity is not even about like the whole smashing and thrashing. The dignity is the fact that I'm like subject. I gotta listen to you talk.
You gotta talk to the dude.
I gotta talk to you.
So you got a real low tolerance.
I have very low tolerance. I can't engage in conversations with dumb people. Like it's just not something that I can do. Like
I'm the same way, and I don't understand. Like I feel bad for women because like you know I'm that way just with like guys you know what I'm saying like who I consider like my friends or you know what I'm saying like just like people that I like to like build or like vibe with mm-hmm. like you as women like you guys actually not only have to find a connection to like vibe with them but you also guys also get physical with them that has to be like so like
yeah which
has to be such a lot
which is why I find that a lot of women are inadvertently just being celibate like we never made the choice we never said it but inadvertently that seems to be what's happening because there's just too much to deal with.
These niggas irritate me and I'm just looking to, you know just be cool or whatever just be boys or whatever like, y'all actually look, be like physical with these niggas. I don't know how y'all do it because some of these niggas are dumb and their nails are dirty.
Yeah, exactly. They're dirty and they're dumb. It's like, you know, you just can't catch a break. So it's like, you know, I might as well just, I don't even know anymore. Like, but that's another story. But
pray for me.
Listen, that's how we have to do. Put me in the prayer box. Put me in the anointed prayer box. Not the regular prayer box now, the anointed prayer box.
Right.
The one that's been doused with oil.
I got you.
So that right there was the Urban Dictionary word of the week. Sapiophobic.
Okay. So now, that was fun.
Yes, it was very fun.
Yeah.
And so now we're moving on to my favorite part of the show. I mean, now I feel like whenever we have a show, I feel like the entire show is my favorite part. But usually my favorite segment tends to be the big up of the week. So it's now time for the big up of the week. Watch it. And you feel big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. What? And so this week's big up of the week is Tyler Perry. Right?
Madea.
Tyler Perry, aka Madea, and whatever else he goes by. And so for those of you who don't know, Tyler Perry, you know, there's the big announcement that there's Tyler Perry Studios. Like he opened up Tyler Perry Studios with a whole red carpet event behind it. And
which, did you see the pictures from that?
I saw some of the pictures and I was just like, this is like, I actually thought it was some sort of like red car, like other red carpet award ceremony show that was going on. Like, I was like, wow, there's another award ceremony. I wasn't privy.
I mean, anybody who is anybody in black, Hollywood, and just anybody who's anybody was there, and everyone just looked so regal and black and beautiful. And what I also appreciated was that, like, it seemed like he invited, like, you know, all of the people who played a part in him getting there, or like people who had like roles in like his shows, you know, who may not be like, you know, well known like stars, like, you know, like, you know, he had like Tamla and David Mann there, and they were like taking pictures with like Will and Jada Smith. I was like, okay, come on, black people, this is beautiful. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah, I really thought it. I'm like, is this another Oscars? Like, that's what I thought it was. Like, I had no idea that this was just the opening. I mean, let me not say just to you know, diminish it, but you know what I mean? I feel like, you know, like, and we were talking about this offline, you know, whatever you feel about Tyler Perry, it is what it is. But I think we can't take away the fact that he has created an even bigger platform for people of color to showcase their talents and 100%. to really break, you know, break ground in this industry.
Yeah. Because I'll be honest with you, some of the movies are ass. But you cannot, but that's beside the point. You know, this is not about, you know, your personal preference or, you know, your artistic opinion on, you know, what Tyler Perry or the product that he produces. You know, this is just about, you know, what a black man, you know, has been able to do and has been continuously doing, I would say, for like, what, the last almost 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, for black cinema and black culture. And most importantly, you know, keeping black actors and actresses employed when, you know, mainstream, I hate that term, but I'm going to use it because it's what it is. You know, mainstream Hollywood has essentially turned, you know, their backs. Like, it's so funny now seeing how every, you know, like black, I feel like this black, everything is black now. Like, you always see black, you know, like everyone's getting a chance. Like, black is in now. But like in our, you know what I'm saying? Like, not even like, I would say back in like 2004, 2005, like, you know, nobody was hiring black actors and black actresses, and certainly not before then. You know what I mean? And like Tyler Perry just consistently, like, you know, he's had movies with like Angela Bassett and Thandie Newton, and like, you know, Idris Elba, you know, like these are Taraji P. Henson, you know, Mary J. Blige. These are all, you know, people who have been nominated for Oscars and Emmys and, you know, all of these different awards, you know, that, he just keeps us employed, you know, Cicely Tyson, Lynn Whitfield, like, he keeps black people employed. And for that, like, no matter what your opinion is about, you know, what his art, like, you have to give this man props for that. And now building this studio on, you know,
ground land.
Deep south. Yeah, this land used to be a Confederate army base. You know what I mean? And talk about like becoming, you know, the hope and the dream of your ancestors, the hope and the dream of the slave. Like, come on, man. You know, so I think we got to put that to the side, like however you feel about it. Like, you just got to give this man props. Like, yeah. it's amazing.
And yeah. Also, you know, from what I was reading, that, you know, the 330 acres or whatever
acres of them things.
Oh, that's, yeah, 330 acres is not just necessarily going to be for the studio, but also a portion of it is being designated to house battered women and to house, I think, LGBTQ youth who have been, you know, kicked out of their homes and discriminated against, chastised for you know, their sexual orientation. So, you know, it's not just about the production and the glitz and the glam and providing the jobs in that sense, but it's also giving back to, you know, a community and focusing on the disenfranchised.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's very interesting because in a lot of the movies that he has, you know, put out over the years, there's been that focus on battered women and domestic violence and whatnot. So I think that definitely, it, you know, it all ties in to, you know, what he's been showing us over the years. And he's kind of like putting his money where like his mouth is, in a sense, by saying, yeah, you know, I've kind of, you know, exploited this storyline in so many of my movies, but now I'm actually doing something to give back to, you know, the victims of domestic violence and whatnot. So,
yeah. And I was also reading how, like, apparently, like, if have you seen the video, like, of the tour of the actual set? Have you seen it?
I have not.
Okay. When you're done, go and take a look at that. It's an absolutely beautiful, immaculate set. Like, the set, there's a, like, a, almost like a damn near life-size replica of, like, the White House, like, he built on his, on the set, because apparently he has a deal now with BET. He's going to do original program for BET, and BET has a new streaming service too. It's called BET Plus. And apparently he's like, I think all of his, programming, all his movies and TV shows and things of nature are going to be available there. But he has like this show, it's called The Oval. And you know, it's basically, a White House, fiction or whatever, White House drama, or whatever. But also apparently like there are, like, he's built like, sets of like actual like neighborhoods for like some of his shows. And they have like, you know, homes and things of that nature, like on the set. And apparently all the homes that are on the set that are being used, you know, to film places, they're actually all up to code for like the standards of living of inhabitant, habits. What is it? Look at me. I gotta stop drinking this tequila.
I mean, listen. I told you, Jose gonna mess you up. Jose also is double minded.
Fancy law school word. What is it?
Habitability. Habitability.
People can live there.
Yes, habitability.
Yes, people can live in them shits. How about that?
Warranty of habitability.
Yes. So yes, habitability. There we go. Yeah. So people can, you know, like, they're up to code. So, you know, these places could actually at some point actually become places like for this place or people to live, you know. It's beautiful. I think it's great, you know, and you can, you know, there's room, like, you know, you can have your feelings and your critiques about, you know, like I said again about what the type of work it is, but you really got to give this man props. Like, you know, he's really using his platform, and, you know, to provide, you know, opportunities and, you know, second chances for people. And he at one point was even like homeless, living out of his car, from what I understand, like when he first started.
He was, and I remember there was a whole, like, you know, that there was a whole like focus on that. It's funny because earlier today my friends and I were commenting on this as well too, that, you know, it seems like a lot of people who've made it in this, you know, I guess this industry, have all lived in their cars, and we're wondering, in order for us to make it, do we now need to go live in our cars?
Like, I honestly think about that type of stuff all the time. Yeah. Like, sometimes I think about like where I'm in life, and, you know, I'm not in a bad spot, but like that, sometimes I feel like I could be further along maybe if I
lived in your car.
Had lived in my damn car. And I'm dead serious.
No, I mean, we're not even making light of, like, you know, no, homelessness or whatever, but this seems to be the common theme with people who have these. Even out, let's jump out of the industry, but we're talking about, like, I've seen on LinkedIn, you know, you know, attorneys who are now like heads of like Fortune 500 companies or whatnot. Their story was like, I was living in my car in high school or in college. And I'm like,
I don't think my rock bottom was bottom enough.
It wasn't bottom enough. We didn't hit. I mean, I felt like I had a lot of, you know, rock hard bottoms, but clearly not the type that's catapulting my career in a way that's, you know, lucrative.
Word. My car, if you look inside my car right now, it looks like I live in it.
I mean, I don't have a car, but if I had one, I too believe that it would look like somebody was living in it.
Yeah.
But we digress. Yes, we digress.
I can't live out my car.
Merlot is taking me to other, you know, levels here.
Yes.
But
so, Joseph Cuervo is also
Jose. Yes. But with the whole Tyler Perry thing, I like some of his movies. After a while, you're like, how many more damn Madeas?
Like
a Halloween Madea. I'm like, what's going on here?
He does have some movies that like I really enjoyed. The Why Did I Get Married movies.
Very insightful.
I thoroughly enjoyed those. Yeah.
Very insightful. He definitely has. He's like, he has good ones, and then it's like a hit or a miss, in my opinion, when it comes to Tyler Perry.
Have you seen Acrimony?
I have. And I'm not a big fan of it, to be honest.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was like the most. We watched it. We were over a friend's, a couple times, you know, that are friends or whatever. We were like, we all watched it together. And like, what's interesting is that it did really like spark like a huge debate, like of, you know, Mars versus Venus, like debate or whatever. But the movie itself was just so ridiculous. I'm certainly not going to go into, we're supposed to be keeping it positive, but I want you to hire some writers that know how to tie up loose ends in a movie. Cause that was,
I was
not
just
it.
Like, what is this? You know what I mean? Like, I was like all types of confused. Like, come on. Like, I've seen your work and I feel like this should not have made it past the smell test. But it did.
Now when the Madea plays, and like when the Madea plays came out, like, cause I know when growing up, like my church, like that was like a huge thing in our churches and things. Was that huge for you guys too? Or
no, not, you know, I'm Haitian. So I grew up in Haitian churches. So the Madea situation.
For clarity, listeners, I'm a country nigga. So
Paul is what we call a Black American. he's from here,
you know. I actually remember the first time I actually saw a Madea play, like it was like a huge deal, and to this day I feel like every Thanksgiving, like when you go home, like in a Black household, like Black American household, like you can always find some sort of Tyler Perry production playing in the background of everything. So I mean, Tyler Perry has been a part of you know, Black culture and Black American culture and Black lives, especially Black Christian culture, you know, for damn near, I want to say 2 decades. So definitely kudos to him. Hats off to him. Big deal. Very proud of him.
Very proud. But you know what, you know, obviously, you know, we're bigging him up or we're giving him all the accolades and whatnot. But I always have to kind of go to that other spectrum because, you know, I am a social media lurker. Although I do try to participate in conversations and I try to comment and, you know, be out there. But I do so sparingly because I feel like, I don't know what it is, but I have been getting a lot of trolls lately trying to come for me.
Really?
Like, and I know I'm like going off topic a little bit, but like this. This happened to me.
Drunk. It's okay.
I'm not drunk, actually. Merlot doesn't get me drunk, but it gets me aware, more aware and in tune. So this happened to me. It's two distinct situations that occurred on Instagram. And the first one was, remember that group Allure?
Allure, yes.
Allure, Allure. Yeah, so I loved the one song that they came out with, or the two songs, or whatever. All Cried Out. Yeah, that's all we know. You know, it is what it is. You know, they haven't been back in the lab. It is what it is. Now, I am 99.99% sure whoever is running their fan page is some like
intern. Who has a fan page?
Allure. I mean, stop. It hasn't been active as of the last, but in 2018, I was the subject of a trolling situation.
Are you kidding me?
I swear to you.
Over on, Allure?
Yes. There was a comment that was made on not an Allure page, mind you.
Niggas just do anything on the internet, won't you?
Listen, I think it, and it's always the Shade Room that gets me in trouble. The Shade Room posted.
Yeah, well, you know better.
The Shade Room posted something about Allure, whatever. And, you know, people were commenting, and one was like, yeah, you know, they're out, you know, we're still waiting for them to come up with the album. It was something along those lines. Or, like, people don't know about Allure, or people forgot about Allure, or whatever. And I was like, yeah, that's right. Something like that. Something very innocent. I don't know. Whoever that runs their fan page, the intern from, like, City Tech.
A Russian bot.
A Russian bot came after me and was just, and went through like this whole paragraph. Like, you are a woman who promotes, women empowerment and mental illness awareness. And you're coming out here tearing down women. I was like, what? First of all, troll, you had time to go through my profile to see that I promote women empowerment?
Over Allure.
I was just like, what is going on here? And I was like taken aback at the fact that they had time. They and them cousins or the intern that they paid had time to really go in on me. So that was that. I left that alone. Left it alone. I was like, you know what, whatever. Fast forward to yesterday. So the Shade Room posted, I don't know if you saw it, but this, they call him John, but I think his name is Justin. The white high school, like, drum major that's like.
Oh, yeah, my man John was getting it.
Yeah. So they posted.
John got, like, more rhythm than I got. I ain't got shit to say about John, but carry on.
Let me tell you. So they were posting, like, you know, the two videos of John. And I've seen them post videos of John before. And I was like, oh, this is cute. And, you know, people are always mixed reviews when it comes to white people doing what people deem black people shit, right? Like, why is John leading the pack? Like, those were some of the comments. Or
because John ass got moves, that's,
you know,
why.
Or they were like, you know, we're always quick to, like, you know, praise the white man or whatever. So, I mean, it is, but you know.
Yeah.
So somebody had made a comment on the page or under the Shade Room post, and was like something. It was something along the lines of. I can't remember if it was like, I think it was exactly that comment, like, you know, why is John leading the pack? And I think I respond like, you know, questions we need answers to, LOL. Something like that. But it was some random person. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, you kind of get engaged in other people's comments. And it was, you know. So apparently this individual who made that comment was posting a rhetorical question, because everybody was commenting under that post because however they phrased it was hilarious. And apparently they chose me to be their victim, and they literally post, they at me under their comment and was like, oh, you know, for somebody who is always preaching against discrimination.
Don't like you.
Yo, this person really went in and they were like, yo, for somebody who is preaching against discrimination, like, this is crazy that, you know, you're even making this comment. And when I saw it initially, I actually had to respond. I'm like, I'm going to need you to direct this comment to the intended party, because I don't see where my comments warranted this response. So then I left it at that, thinking that, you know, they're going to leave it at that. Oh, they came back. But one thing that I don't do, I actually don't engage in reading nonsense. So I saw that they posted another paragraph and I was just like, oh, it looks like you're trolling today. Have a good night. And I'm like, God bless you. Have a good night. And I left it at that. They came back with another paragraph, which I did not read. But it was just like, this was my trolling experience.
Word.
Like,
I've had trolling experiences too. I feel you.
But I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I'm kind of not.
Let me tease up though. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was like, I'm not sure where this was supposed to tie in, but go ahead.
No, but I will say this. Like, one thing that I know too about like trolls and like my experiences, you know, just like from writing and stuff like that. Like, I've certainly had like people like sending me like DMs with a whole bunch of like crazy ass fuck shit. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? But like, what you can't do is I used to be like, I used to be ready. My fingers, like my Twitter fingers. See, you know what I'm saying? But what I don't do now is I don't argue with these niggas on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, that's what niggas on the internet to do. Like, niggas love to internet, love to argue on the internet. And if you see me in real life, they ain't got shit to say. You know what I'm saying? And I'm entirely too intelligent and too smart and have entirely too much shit to do to sit around and argue with, you know, people on the internet about trivial shit. And you like really like trying to like troll me
for
having an opinion. Like, why go find a hobby? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, why are you like trolling? Like, I don't understand that.
Yeah, I so that's why because I think with the Allure one, that call was my first trolling experience.
That like, still blows my mind, because Allure deadass has not had a like song in like 20 good years.
Listen.
The two songs they had, like you said, the two songs you had, they were certainly bops, but like,
I mean, I was in middle school singing that.
In 2019, we cannot be going that hard for Allure.
No, seriously.
All Cried Out, it's not even an original song.
I don't remember who it was, but yeah.
It was like from the 80s. I think it was like Lisa, mm-hmm. Lisa Stein. What's her name? Hold on. You know, I got to get my Google on, because when it comes to music, gotta be accurate.
But it was not their original song. It was a remake.
Lisa and the damn Cult Jam.
That's not who wrote the original song. Yeah. And so, yeah, no, they really came at me. Allure really came at me. And I was just like, this is crazy. But at the time, that was my first trolling experience. I was kind of like responding. But then after a while, I was like, I don't have time for this. So that kind of prepared me for this recent trolling experience, where I was just like, you know, my comment was like, you know, at first I was like, listen, direct your comment to the appropriate party. Because I know sometimes people just be so amped to respond that they at the wrong person. But when they continued with me, I was like, I'm not even going to read this. It's going to put my blood pressure up. And I'm not about that life right now. I'm trying to live a healthy life. I'm just going to let them know. I was just like, you know, whenever you throw the God bless you, have a good night, it always throws people off. It always kills them. So I did that. And then they continued to respond. And I just didn't even, I don't even know what they said. Like, I just left it alone. And they left it alone too, because they saw that I was not going to engage with them. But I think I brought all of that up to say this, is that with Tyler Perry, although we're bigging him up and, you know, I'm, you know, kudos to him for everything that he does. There's a lot of, you know, internet trolls going after him with respect to, you know, this great accomplishment. And so what I was seeing as of recently, there were a couple of posts talking about, well, you know, that's cool and everything for Tyler Perry, but Tim Reed actually is the first, you know, African-American to own a studio. And then there was another post talking about, I think you said it was like Oscar Michelle.
Yeah, Oscar Michelle.
Yeah. So now everybody's coming out like, yeah, that's cool and everything, Tyler, but you're not the first one. You're not the only one. But to take it a step further, the conspiracy the more of the trolling effect was that they're claiming that the reason that Tim Reed, I guess, was not as acknowledged and not as successful, not as supported by the Black community with his studio, as opposed to Tyler now, who everybody is ranting and raving about, is because Tyler promotes the gay agenda. And so therefore, you know, he has the support, and that's why he's like thriving and all this other stuff, because he's promoting the gay agenda. And so it's like in Hollywood, if you're not promoting the gay agenda, then you're not going to go far. And so that was some of the trolling that I was seeing with respect to Tyler Perry and, you know, his big announcements of the studio.
I do not have enough Jose to necessarily deal with this topic.
Not enough Jose.
But like, first of all, what the fuck is the gay agenda? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, first of all, Tyler Perry, first of all, like, I know a lot of people who condemn Tyler Perry because they think that a lot of his storylines actually condemn, you know, or subtly condemn or criticize, like, you know, homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I know for a fact, just from my own viewing, that like he uses, like, you know, AIDS and like people catching AIDS in his movies and things of that nature, contracting AIDS, mm-hmm, and things of that nature in his movies as like the ultimate, like, payback for them doing like some sort of like devious deed, or so it's almost like he's demonizing that. Like, I just know that a lot of people have a lot of like things to say about his portrayal of homosexuality as and almost using it as like the ultimate like wrong that, mm-hmm, like a man can do and things of that nature. But when people talk about the gay agenda, I feel like what they're really talking about is like, you know, just people who identify with the LGBTQA, you know, community, you know, looking for representation, just like the Black community is like looking for representation. So I just think that that's like, you know, like you can't really fault, you know, people in from that community from wanting to see, you know, themselves like represented on screen, you know what I mean? Or to see, you know, to see their experience humanized, to be looked at as human, you know, they go through discrimination, you know, just like, you know, other communities do. And, you know, people talk about the Black agenda all the time too. And we are always up in arms whenever people talk about the quote unquote Black agenda. And the Black agenda is really like just wanting to see, you know, Black faces, you know, on screen or and represented in the media. Like, I don't think that it, by, you know, you talk about the gay agenda, I don't think that, you know, again, the LGBTQ IA, if I'm messing it up, I apologize.
I mean, at this point, honestly speaking, I mean, I don't want to get as I mean, some people might find calling them the alphabet people offensive, as Dave Chappelle does, but I can't keep up with all the letters, so that's why I stop at LGBTQ.
I'm certainly not gonna call them the alphabet people either, but I love all the letters. I don't have an issue with any of y'all.
I stop at LGBTQ. That's what I stop at. I mean,
that's dude. Okay, yeah, you know what I mean. But like, you know, it's like, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with, you know, wanting to see yourselves like represented, you know, in media. Like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I don't think that, you know, that community is trying to turn or convert people to be, you know, quote unquote, whatever, you know, alternative sexuality or however you want to like phrase it. You know what I mean? It's, they're just literally trying to express, you know, what their experiences are. They want people to understand what, like, what their experiences are. And also, you don't turn, you watching somebody on television who, you know, might, you know, that is gay or lesbian or whatever, that's not what, you don't quote unquote turn that just because you see, you watch something with somebody in it that's gay. Like, if you, I personally believe like that's the way that you're born, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's just ridiculous to me. And, you know, maybe Tim Reed, like, and Tim Reed, let's be honest, Tim Reed is a respected, like, member of, like, you know, of Black Hollywood. Like, you know, he's married to Daphne Maxwell Reed, who played Light Skin and Viv on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Mm-hmm. And he was obviously Ray Campbell on Sister Sister. And he had a show, it was a very short-lived Black comedy. I believe it came on CBS in the 90s. I cannot think of the name of that show. It wasn't Evening Shade. It was Frank's Place. Yeah. So we know Tim Reed is very well respected. You know what I mean? But like, we're talking about, let's be honest, like, we're talking about Tyler Perry here. We're talking about like nothing that Tim Reed, and this is no disrespect to Tim Reed whatsoever, but like, I think Tim Reed's studio is 54 acres. Tyler Perry's studio is 330 acres. Literally, like, it's the largest studio, movie studio in America. Like, Disney, Warner Brothers, ABC, like, all, Fox, Paramount, all these other studios can literally fit onto this man's lot and there will still be room left over. Like, what he's accomplished has never been accomplished by anybody else at this level and at this magnitude.
And I think and that that's what the news outlets were saying. Like, and that's what I think we're trying to decipher at first, because, you know, they're saying that he's the first African-American, Tyler Perry, that is the first African-American who independently owned. And so I think that that emphasis on independently, you know, we don't really know. Like, I don't know how Tim Reid owned his studio. I don't know if he was a co-owner. I don't know.
And no disrespect to Tim Reid, but I'll be honest with you, nothing that Tim Reid did or produced or whatever has had the cultural impact of anything that, of the project that Tyler Perry in Black people. Let's just be honest.
No, I mean,
and that's not to knock Tim Reid, because Tim Reid is a legend. His wife is a legend. Like, he is a Black icon. You know, I have absolutely nothing negative to say about him. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, Tyler Perry, like, that man, like, he is just, you know, had such a vast impact on, you know, Black culture over the last 20 years. Like, let's not play about that. Let's just be for real, you know?
Yeah.
And we don't have to do that. Like, we can celebrate Tyler Perry. Like, it's not like anyone's trying
it's not
to
a
like,
competition in these streets.
Exactly. It's not like anyone's trying to intentionally omit any of the contributions of Tim Reid. You can't omit them because they are vast also.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in Oscar Micheaux's, you know, there would be no Tyler Perry, there would be no Tim Reid without like Oscar Micheaux. Like, we know that, but you don't have to take away from what, like you said, it's not a competition, you know?
Yeah, but unfortunately, I feel like with our community, like, everything kind of almost is a competition. Like, there has to, there's something, like, that's they're always one-upping.
Well, actually, everybody wants to one-up. Everybody wants to be
everything's a one-up.
Woker than the next. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's definitely an inherent problem with our community, which, you know, I guess topic for another day. But with all of that being said, Tyler Perry is still our big up of the week, regardless of all the negative rhetoric that's going out there in these streets, you know. Yeah.
We love you, Tyler.
We love you, Tyler. And, you know, I feel like my thespian days from my childhood, I feel like it's being reawoken.
Were you an actor?
I was. I mean, I guess you could call it that. Like, I was in a lot of plays as a dancer, singer, and, you know, I guess actor when I was younger. School Me stuff, too. Obviously. School and church.
Actor and a singer. I was in like drama and all
that.
Yeah, kind of
yeah, exactly. School and church, and I mean, I was in plays up until I think like high school. So. And it's funny because, you know, you kind of forget the things that you used to do. And I'm like, wait, I was actually like in productions and shit.
Yeah.
So now as an adult, I mean, we never have time to do all the things that we used to do or used to love or whatever. But I'm like, I mean, Tyler, since you got 330 acres of land for a studio, I mean, if you're trying to, you know, help a sister out, give me a little speaking role. I'll do what I gotta do to make some coins.
I know he retired Madea. I know he said he's not making any more Madea movies. Yeah. They did like a Madea's funeral or whatever. But like, Tyler, like, you rich. Like, I'm broke. Like,
you know what
I have
I'm saying?
Problem. I have no problem. I'll get fitted for the Madea outfit. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to do it no more. I'll do it.
Exactly. I'll do some. I'll be a stagehand. I don't know.
I will do it.
I'll do what I gotta do.
Yeah. Have you seen my student loan? Do you know, like, we certainly aren't going to talk about student loans tonight because that we'll be here all night. But, like,
my blood pressure is rising just thinking about it.
Yeah, Madea. I'll be Madea. Heller. I can do
it. Oh, man. So, moving along to our Womp Womp of the Week.
We're just at the Womp Womp of the Week?
We just at the Womp Womp of the Week. Exactly. And we're already like 47 minutes in the show. But this show, you know, whenever we do the show, I feel like the discussion topics are about like the preliminaries in a sense, right? Yeah. But our Womp Womp of the Week. So I think I was talking to you about this, before getting online, but I don't know if you heard of the situation that took place with the New Orleans Saints quarterback, DeMario Davis, where he was fined seven.
The man of God.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he was fined $7,000 by the NFL for wearing a man of God headband. And at first when I saw this, I was like, are you effing kidding me? I'm like, and we were having this conversation as well, too. Like, the NFL is basically run by just a whole bunch of rich white, in my, you know, men. A lot of them from the South. Football is very heavy in the South. You're a country boy, so you know.
Football is like a religion.
It's religion. Yeah, it's religion. There is no separation of church and state when it comes to football. So when I saw that this was making like headlines, like homeboy had, and mind you, the headband was appropriate in that it was still representing the Saints' colors.
Mm-hmm.
It was a regular headband that just said man of God. It was representing his personal belief, his person, like he wasn't, you know, casting that on anybody else. It said man of God, referring to him. And he got fined $7,000 for it. Now, you know, it's since, you know, he appealed and he since, you know, was, I guess, exonerated, if you want to call it that, and didn't have to really pay the fine. But the fact that they even went that far to fine him for wearing his headband that says man of God, I find to be very ridiculous.
I mean, it is ridiculous, especially when you're like, from what I understand, the NFL has like a policy about, like, you know, players not being able to wear like apparel or whatever that like promotes or like self promotes or like with personal messages and things of that nature, and you know, and if you do that, if you violate that rule, like there's a fine attached to it. But especially when it comes to, I just think it's kind of hypocritical because, like, you know, with this particular message, because his message was man of God, and I just know. You know, I'm not the biggest NFL fan for a number of reasons, but like I do recall, like, you know, certain players like Tim Tebow, like Tim Tebow has basically branded himself, or, you know, as like America's, you know, America's holy man, you know,
mm-hmm.
And there have been numerous instances of him, like, you know, kneeling in the end zone and praying, you know, after like a touchdown, or like, you know, doing pregame warm-ups and like things of that nature. And it's nothing but praise and adoration, you know, for his relationship and his, you know, love for God and things of that nature. And, you know, yet however, it seems like to me with the NFL, whenever a black man, you know, expresses his, you know, opinion or his personal, you know, affinities, you know, or beliefs, like, there's always a swift backlash. You know, the most obvious example of that would be Colin Kaepernick, you know, mm-hmm. But then you have the situation, and you have like Marshawn Lynch, you have even Cam Newton, flip floppy ass, but still Cam Newton has caught a lot of flack from the NFL. You know, Richard Sherman. You know, and the list go. I can't think of the other guy's name. I think he plays for the Dolphins, but he also knelt like Colin Kaepernick. I can't think of his name though. But you know, it just seems like whenever a black man, you know, voices his opinion or stands up for himself, you know, in that particular league, that's why I personally don't support them. You know, there has been a long history of, like, you know, racism in the NFL from its inception. You know, and even especially like this DeMario who you're talking about, apparently he was playing in the quarterback, you know, for the Saints in this particular game, which is usually occupied by Drew Brees, who's a white man and a darling of the NFL, you know. And now all of a sudden, you know, because, you know, you have something to say, and it's a history of, like, you know, black men not being given the position of quarterback, you know, in the game of football and NFL, because quarterback is typically considered to be like the brains or like the leader of the group, and they typically, you know, give black men the role of like the worker, like the wide receiver, like things like that, but not the position of the brain of the team. So it's just ironic to me that now you pick this, you know, time to do that when this black man is, like, you know, the taking the position of quarterback. So I say all that to say, like, the NFL has a long, long history, and we would be here all day. We could do a whole show just on the NFL, the history of the NFL, and racism, and, you know, things of that nature. But, like, it certainly seems like they are just being hypocritical and picking and choosing who to stop, or who to silence when they're trying to give, or portray rather, or relay personal messages about their own personal beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I was like, you know, I feel like, I mean, like you said, like, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of the NFL, not because I don't particularly watch football like that or care to really, you know, watch football like that. But I just think that a lot of the things that they stand on, they're very hypocritical when it comes to their players. I find that they're a very racist organization.
Yeah.
Very racist organization. And I just don't feel the need to really participate in, you know, in what they do and what they stand for. So, but, you know, they're out here disappointing and being hypocritical. And I just, when I saw that headline, I was like, oh man, here they go again. They haven't learned their lesson. Like,
didn't he donate the money from like all the sales of that particular hairband or whatever to like some sort of charity?
I think he did. And my thing is like, NFL, come on, you're just coming off the Colin Kaepernick situation. You're not gonna leave black people alone at least for 90 days. Like, can we get 90 days?
It's never gonna happen. All the NFL sees with black men is a product, and you know, nigga run and nigga be quiet. You know what I mean? And if you break that rule, then you get, you know, you get blackballed or you get ostracized. I cannot support the NFL. I'm sorry.
So for that NFL, you get the womp womp of the week for messing with Demario, who was really just trying to do what he had. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. But that's that. So we are now on to the meat of the show after like 54 minutes. And so I'm glad that we kind of waited to talk about this because I hate, you know, ironically enough, I hate reporting on news like right when things happen. I like things to like breathe a little bit, flesh it out before we start really having true conversations and in-depth conversations on things. But, mm-hmm. you know, as you know, as many of you know, the verdict for the Botham Jean case came out last week. And when this case first came about, I had talked about it on this show because it was just very interesting to me. Just the facts, right? You know, a black man's in his own home getting shot by this white, you know, cop who's claiming that, you know, she was going into her own apartment, but it really wasn't. And then there was all these stories later on that actually showed that I think the two, I don't know if they actually dated, but had went out before. So it wasn't like the stranger that I guess she was trying to make it seem like at first. So I found this story to be very bizarre. And so it's interesting now, fast forward, you know, we're at the point where we have a verdict and the verdicts came out last week that, you know, Amber Geiger was found guilty of murder, but she's only being sentenced to 10 years, which 10 really
raggedy years.
10 raggedy years. And we know she's going to be out in like 5 because her parole is up in like 5 years. And of course, she's going to make her parole. you know, the moral of the story is here is that if you're white, you can kill somebody in their own home, no violence, no nothing, not even a, you know, bitch, whatever, and only get 5 years for it. 5 years, which, you know, for those of us who've watched Orange is the New Black, we know that you could do 5 years easy.
Work.
You know what I'm saying? But this trial definitely sparked a lot of conversation, a lot of controversy within the communities. And, you know, one, the fact that she got 10 years, really 5 years, was a blow to everything. But the intricacies of the trial were quite interesting. And then, you know, the sentencing, you know, was quite interesting. And so I wanted to kind of get into that a little bit with you to kind of get, like, you know, your opinions of the trial and the aftermath of the trial and really try to dig into some of the themes that we saw play out here and some of the, I guess, the rhetoric that we're hearing now. So I know that, you know, I guess if we're trying to go in some sort of chronological order, during the trial,
I would, and I just want to say that, like, I literally watched none of this trial outside of portions of Amber's testimony, because I didn't have the mental capacity. I didn't have the mental space for it because it's just so tiresome of seeing black men just treated like,
How many of these trials can we sit through? You know what I mean? Like how many a year can we sit through? I mean, the reason that I think that I was interested or tried to tune in, I didn't watch the whole trial, but tried to tune in as much as I could, was because I knew that I had talked about it when it first happened. Like when it just happened, I talked about it. So I wanted to kind of follow through. But in terms of, you know, not going through the, you know, not, you know, sparing everybody the details, because if you watched it, you watched it. If you didn't, you didn't. Was just the attempt to, you know, really humanize Amber Geiger and to give her, like, to give the defense, you know, all sorts of tools to, you know, in a sense, exonerate her, at least lessen, you know, her liability in this particular case. So we were talking about the Castle Doctrine offline and how in this particular case, the judge allowed the defense to use the Castle Doctrine. And for those of you who don't know what the Castle Doctrine is, it's basically, you know, I mean, in layman's terms, if you're a homeowner and, you know, you're basically allowed to protect yourself, protect your home against, you know, intruders, strangers, or whatever the case is. And if you happen to kill somebody in the course of trying to protect yourself in your home or protect your home, your property, then, you know, that serves as some sort of defense for you. And, but the idea though, is that it's your home, right? That's the idea.
Which in this case, it was not the case. It was not your home.
It was not her home, but the judge allowed the defense to use this doctrine. So essentially, basically, the defense was able to argue or given the ability to argue that because Amber Geiger thought it was her home, she had the right to use, you know, deadly force to protect herself, which is utterly ridiculous. Just based on the facts of the case.
It's not your house.
You weren't even in the house. You were outside trying to enter the home.
Right.
Like it would have been one thing as if she was drunk and found herself inside of this house, right? You know, the door was open, she thought it was her house. She ended up getting in the house. And now Botham Jean was trying to enter the house that she's already in, and she is, you know, that would have been maybe a different story. Maybe I could have bought that. But you can't be on the outside of the apartment trying to get in and want to argue the Castle Doctrine to say that you were trying to protect yourself and your home from an intruder when you, my friend, are the intruder. You're outside. You're outside. You're not in the home. You're not in the confines of the space. But the fact that that was even allowed, it just makes you wonder, like, what is really happening in these courtrooms? Whose side is the judge on? And this was a black judge, a black female judge. Like, whose side is she on, in a sense?
The side of Jesus, according to her.
Well, but which Jesus are we talking about? Which Jesus are we talking about?
White, blue-eyed, blonde Jesus.
The blonde Jesus? Like, who are we talking about?
Not dreadlock D'Angelo Jesus.
So that was definitely, you know, that was, you know, for the people in the legal community mostly, you know, and those who are really in tune with the community, that was one thing that I saw that was blowing up on social media. Just this, it was just so outrageous. It's like
the Castle Doctrine, right?
Yeah. It's like, all I have to do is think that I'm in my own home or imagine.
And it's absolutely ridiculous. And I personally believe that, you know, the judge had like a soft spot for the defendant. And I think that that's why she allowed them to use that Castle Doctrine, because it's just not a legally sound, you know, jury instruction. Like, you know, if the whole basis of, you know, the Castle Doctrine is that one has to be, you know, has the right to protect their own domain or their own castle, then guess what, Amber? You need to be in your own motherfucking castle and in your own motherfucking domain before you can pull out your gun and just kill people in their own house for eating ice cream.
Exactly.
Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I personally think it was completely improper for that judge to give that jury to allow that to give that jury that particular instruction that they could, you know, consider that as like an affirmative defense. I think that was absolutely ridiculous. It's not legally sound. Like, she was not in her own home. And I would love to know if that same instruction would be, you know, allowed had, you know, the roles been reversed and, you know, Mr. Botham had, you know, walked into Amber Geiger's you know, apartment unannounced and mistakenly and Shiny killed her.
We would not have even gotten that far. No. It would have been a totally different trial. Would have been a totally different trial if that was the case. And, you know, I think that's one reason people were up in arms, was it was just like, again, you see like just the disparity and you know, with that, like it's still shocking to me that this was even allowed. I mean, it is Texas. It is Dallas.
And niggas is crazy in Texas. Texas is a crazy ass state. It's almost as crazy as Florida.
Yeah. I think like after Florida definitely comes Texas.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is with that. But I think that was definitely a point of conversation. But then, and so, you know, a lot of people were highly upset, highly offended, highly disgusted at the fact that, one, you know, the brother of the victim, of the murdered victim, gave Amber Geiger a hug. But even more so that the judge gave Amber Geiger a hug and a Bible. I think her personal Bible, from what I understand.
I think so, too.
And, I mean, when it comes to the brother giving the hug, I mean, that I can't necessarily speak on too much because I don't know what motivated him. It could, you know, from what I'm understanding, the research that I've done, he has been very, you know, quiet throughout the whole ordeal. He's been depressed about it. I think it really hit him hard. He hasn't really been as vocal. And so I think when all of this was said and done, I don't know what spirit moved him, or maybe he felt like this is what he needed to do in order for him to heal and grieve his brother. I can't touch that. But the judge, I feel like it was highly inappropriate for her to give Amber Geiger a hug and to essentially console her. You know, after the verdict.
In all of your experience, in all of your years of being an attorney, Rita, and we can confine it strictly to your time or to our time as former prosecutors, when have you ever in life seen a judge get off the bench and go and hug somebody who was just convicted of murder?
Never in my life. Never in my life.
In my life. I have never seen a judge get off the bench and hug someone for less. You know what I mean? Like, so for murder, I just think I think it's highly inappropriate. And especially considering, you know, this particular individual, you know, who essentially has taken, I won't say she hasn't shown any remorse for it, but she's still holding on to this whole a defense that, you know, she thought it was her own home. And it's like, not only that, but, you know, you are a police officer and you're mandated and you know, to protect all people. But yet the prosecution was able to admit all of these like social media posts of you, like essentially disparaging people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, bragging on your ability to kill people. You know, and it's just, this is, and I think that the issue a lot of us have is, you know, as the Black community have with this particular issue, is the fact that, you know, it just seems that white women and white people, but white women especially, are just afforded a certain level of benefit of the doubt or assigned a certain level of purity, you know, that like Black women and Black people in general just certainly don't get.
Yeah.
Like, certain level of empathy that this judge felt for this white woman, you know, whereas, you know, there are hundreds and, you know, because I guess she went through some sort of traumatic situation, but there are like hundreds and thousands, of young black men and women who also are, you know, who have engaged in criminal conduct and are suffering from trauma, and who deserve some sort of empathy and hugs and things of that nature, but they don't get them.
Yeah. And I think that that's exactly why, you know, not just the black community, but, you know, just society in general, those who Absolutely. Are up in arms about it are upset because the level of compassion and humanity that's afforded to white people in general, whether they be women, men, whatever, that type of compassion and humanity is not afforded to black people. It's not afforded to black defendants at all. At all.
And I think that what we don't understand, or what our, you know, a lot of people in the community don't understand, is that, you know, we operate in this guise of, like, you know, Christianity and, you know, forgiving and forgiveness, and, you know, black forgiveness is always given at the expense of, you know, black trauma and black lives and black death. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like we're always so quick to forgive people, you know, who mean us absolutely nothing but harm. Like, yeah, this woman made light of the fact of, you know, according to her text messages, making light of the fact that Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's really sad. I find that it's really, really sad that's the case all the time. I feel like, mm-hmm. I agree with you. I feel like black people are always like, we're always forgiving. We're always the one that has to kind of be, I don't know, the bigger person in situations like this. But at the end of the day, and I remember, you know, in just our conversations prior to, you know, I had to learn, you know, a little while ago that forgiveness is not about, it's not about others, really. It's about yourself. Right. And, you know, either you and your God or yourself. You know, if I harm you, me saying I forgive you, Paul, like, has nothing to do with the real process of forgiveness. Like, true forgiveness is me, you know, forgiving myself, asking for forgiveness from my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, or whoever the hell you ask for forgiveness from, mm-hmm. and you move on. If I never say to you, Paul, I forgive you, that doesn't hinder the process of my forgiveness. That doesn't stop my growth. And I think that black people, I don't know if it's because we want to show that we're the most Christian. We want to show that we're always rising above. But I don't think that this is rising above. I think
do we want to show that, you know, we, you know, subconsciously, you know, we don't, we want the approval of white people.
I think in my personal opinion, when it comes to this particular judge, just from watching her mannerisms, I've watched several interviews with her, so I'm not just coming out of my ass with this. I feel like she is an individual who seeks approval, and I feel like this was her platform. This was her time to shine when it comes to that. You know, she talked about in an interview she had with a CNN correspondent that, you know, she had heard a sermon, I don't know if it was the week before or the day of, that was talking about forgiveness for the lost, and that, you know, Amber had asked her, you know, is God going to forgive her? And do you think that I can be, you know, have a meaningful life after this and all this extra stuff? And she was saying how she felt moved and compelled, I guess, to be that, I don't know, that beacon of hope or whatever it was for her. And I feel like, you know, as a judge who's supposed to be impartial, that it was, in a sense, inappropriate. Like, you can go back to your church and pray for her. You could put her in the prayer box if you want to. But I feel like that live display in the courtroom, one, was not a depiction of the separation of church and state that's supposed to take place. Mm-hmm. Although that's arguable as well too, because we still got people swearing on Bibles and stuff, so there really is no church and state separation. So that's that. But I feel like, because, you know, this giving of, this is a murder trial. The family of this gentleman, friends of this gentleman, are present watching all of this take place, and I feel like her. action of, oh, let me hug this white woman. I don't know if she was trying to show, like, you know what, guys, this is what forgiveness looks like. Let me be an example. I don't know what was going on through her mind.
But yeah, but you're giving an example that nobody, you're being an example that nobody asked for.
Nobody asked for you to be John the Baptist or whatever you were trying to portray. Like, nobody asked for that. And I don't believe that her actions necessarily correlate with, you know, her Christian beliefs, to be honest. I didn't find that to be the sense, in my opinion. I feel like there was something else behind it. It could have been more publicity for her, who knows? But I just don't find it to be genuine.
I think it's really like white approval. Like, apparently, like, this judge was like endorsed by like the Dallas Police Department. I think she has a very high like rating with the NRA.
Well, she was a former prosecutor as well too. So, I mean, obviously, for both of us, being former prosecutors is one thing, but being a former prosecutor in Dallas, I think, is a different story.
And isn't it? It sure is. And I think that what we fail to realize in this judge, and, you know, certain, you know, subsection of the black community fail to realize, is that, you know, we're always talking about, like, you know, eradicating like white supremacy. But like, when you do shit like this, when you like don't hold people accountable for their actions, or when you don't make them face the fact that, like, you know, what they did was, you know, racially motivated, whether it be covert, then this is what it was subtly or covertly, rather, you know, the racial undertones. But like, you are just perpetuating white supremacy, because white people are never going to understand, you know, the severity of their actions and the weight of their conduct and the impact that, you know, white supremacy has on the world as a whole if people continue to just give it a pass or allow, you know?
I mean, these are the Uncle Toms that people talk about.
Yeah. And there's no accountability. And even looking, I'll never forget, like, the day, first of all, okay, you're found guilty. Was I shocked? Yes, I was. You know what I mean? But that's great. And then the jury gives you 10 days. And then, you know, the whole situation happens with the judge hugging her and the brother hugging her. And the whole narrative now is not even about, you know, the fact that this woman was convicted, a convicted murderer. It's about the fact that the brother forgave her. And that and it's like they're already starting. It's like the media loves a white darling. Like, they're already, you know, whitewashing, you know, the narrative.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting. It's disgusting to watch, and we have got to understand that it's not our responsibility as black people to dismantle white supremacy, but we also don't need to self-sabotage. And you can self-sabotage, you know, movements by not holding people accountable for their actions. Yeah. You know?
I mean, she could have definitely made her ruling, like I said, said a little prayer in her heart, mm-hmm. and kept it moving.
Yeah.
Like, that did not need to, that display, because I don't see what that display really did, except for, like you said, whitewash the real tragedy here, which was that a innocent young black man, immigrant, you know, from immigrant family in Dallas, well-to-do, working in the financial sector. I think he was working for, I don't know if it was Price Waterhouse Cooper or whatever company, like, well-to-do black man with a bright future, was killed in his own home, hanging out, chilling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the real tragedy here. And that story now has been covered up by this forgiveness.
Making her the victim.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, that's that. Now, what I thought was also interesting, and I know we had talked about this as well too, is, you know, not only, you know, are we dealing with this aftermath of the judge and, you know, everybody hugging this woman, and now that being really top story in America, but not too long after the verdict, the key witness, Joshua Brown, was shot and killed. He was murdered.
Yeah.
What I find to be very interesting, because I've been trying to follow this little news story as well too, is, you know, when it first happened, everybody was automatically on the bandwagon. Like, listen, this is definitely retaliation. The Klansmen came out, you know, they showed out, the Klansmen, aka Dallas PD, came out, showed out, did what they had to do, because the guy, the kid, the young man, was shot in the mouth, which for me gives a sign like you opened your mouth and you spoke, and that's and now you have to pay for it. I thought that was really the narrative. Like, that's what I was hearing. You know, people were talking about it, and I was like, man, this is crazy. But then today, actually, as I was trying to get ready, you know, for today's show, I find that the media is now saying that Joshua Brown apparently is, I don't know if he's some sort of drug lord or he's involved in the drug game, and that his murder was actually drug related, that three men from Louisiana drove to Dallas, Texas for some drug run, some buy and bust or whatever, and they shot him. Like a drug transaction gone wrong. And then the media goes on to talk about November of last year, he was involved in some other drug ring in a club where somebody else was murdered. And that seems to be like, you know, the circus now with respect to this young man who lost his life in connection with testifying, in my opinion, for, you know, the Botham case.
Like, I'm sorry. I just think that story is complete bullshit. Like, you mean to tell me, like, three guys drove up from Louisiana? And I'm not a conspiracy theorist type of dude, but, like, you mean to tell me, like, three dudes drove up for all the way from Louisiana to Dallas to buy some drugs? Like, I've been to Louisiana before. It's plenty of drugs in Louisiana. I think it's, you know, complete bullshit. And, you know, I think that, you know, the prosecution in this case, like, I think that, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theory type of dude, but just this just reeks of, you know, of police involvement. I'll just become quite honest with you. And I think that, you know, this should go as a message to prosecution or prosecutors across the country. When you have people who testify against the police department, like, just like you offer, like, you know, services and witness protection and things of that nature to, like, people who testify against civilians, like, the police departments, like, you need to offer people who testify against them, they also need the same level of protection. And, you know, prosecuting off, I mean, even in, you know, even in this case where you're prosecuting a member of the police officer, you're still operating under the, you know, impression that the police forces are, like, reputable, you know, organizations, to the point where you're not considering the fact that, like, you know, this person is a viable threat to one of the largest organizations in this country, which are police departments. You know, it's just like testifying against the gang, in my opinion. You know, and you need to make sure that you are keeping these people safe. Mm-hmm. You know, it's first and foremost. But, you know, secondly, this whole situation just reeks. Like, the kid was shot in his mouth, and I'm sorry, but, like, you're not gonna shoot somebody over a mouth in the mouth. It's like a robbery gone wrong. That's a very personal thing. And from what I understand, you shoot somebody in the mouth, that's a silence.
Yeah, you're sending a message.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I just think it's really horrible. You know, obviously he was a young guy and he was trying to do the right thing, you know, and it's just horrible. And I hope that Dallas PD, you know, does the right job. But, you know, unfortunately,
they won't.
Yeah, they need to bring in, like, a special police force, a special prosecutor. Well, not necessarily a special prosecutor, but definitely special police, because, or IAB or whatever, or who's investigating. Like, you know, I just think that they can't investigate this themselves, you know.
I mean, they already came up with the whole theory. Like the theory right now and the story right now is that homeboy, you know, Joshua was a drug dealer, is a drug dealer, a big time drug dealer, because he got interstate travel going on, interstate deals happening. Mm-hmm. And that he, you know, they brought up the fact that he was in trouble before.
But I hate when the media does this. It's like, you know, these people, this guy is a victim, and instead of focusing on trying to figure out exactly who did this to him, you know, or whether or not the police department actually had some sort of role in it, like, you are now trying to assassinate this guy's character, and you're essentially, like, put him on trial for his own death. Yeah. And it's just like, we've seen it done with Trayvon Martin. We've seen it done with this guy. We've seen it done, you know, Eric Garner. We've seen it done time and time and time again. And it's racist. Like, there's just no other way to put it. Like, the narrative, you know, even in the Amber Geiger trial or whatever, the narrative shifted from, you know, being about the fact that this woman was convicted of committing a murder to the fact that the family forgave her. And now the shift is to, you know, the criminal record of this young man who testified against her. And it's like, at what point are we going to focus on the fact that this woman killed a guy who should be peaceful. Alive?
The guy was peaceful. He had a promising future, a real promising future. And he was in his own home. He wasn't even doing hood rat things in the streets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he got shot on his, you know, in his house, doing regular boring ass things.
Eating ice cream, which I wish I had some now. I love ice cream.
I would love some ice cream right now, as as well as some Popeye's chicken.
Ooh. Yes. I was thinking about Popeye's earlier.
Yeah, today, Popeye's chicken sounds good. I mean, it's the hour is late, and I don't know if I can actually
swing. Well, you're in Brooklyn. I know you live within walking distance of Popeye's.
I do. The problem is, are they open at this time? Because, you know, there are limits. There are limits. The bodega, yes. But I can go to the bodega right now and get my ass a chopped cheese sandwich. I can get myself a burger. But Popeyes, I got some
walk waiting for me in the kitchen right now.
Yeah, Popeyes, you know, they do have limits. The franchise has limits.
Yeah.
So that might have to be for another day. But either way, I feel like we talked about a lot of important things today. We definitely talked about a lot of trending topics. Sometimes people stay away from trending topics because they're just trending and they don't really suss out the gems from the trending topics. But I feel like we were able to really touch on real issues, real perspectives within the Black community on some of these trending topics.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, which is what I always love to do. I always love to be able to kind of spin and see, like, what's really behind all of this? Like, where can we draw some gems from, you know, from what's currently taking place in these streets?
Yeah.
And, of course, it's always good to do it with, you know, with the homie, PB.
Absolutely. Always a good time.
Yes. So I think we did a lot of talking today. We got to give the people something for the next time, right? We can't just talk about everything at one time.
I agree.
But I think that's a wrap for today's show. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a good place. That's a good place to cut it.
I think it's a good place to end. Yeah. Sad note. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is life, though. It's real life. Half the shit is sad.
That's it.
I mean, this is the society we live in, so we kind of got to take the good with the bad. But before we end the show, though, let people know where we could find you, PB.
Sure, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Who Is P Brom. You can also find me on Medium.com. You can also find me on The Root, as well as Vibe Magazine online. I'm around.
All right.
You can also find me on this show.
Yes.
Talking shit with Rita. Yes. I'll be back.
He'll be back. sooner than you think.
Right.
And for those of you who are interested in finding out how to become a guest on the According to RP show, or if you have any questions, comments about today's show, if you disagreed with something you heard today and you want to really get into it with us. I don't know if I will be the person to respond. Maybe Paul, depending on how much Jose Cuervo he has in the system. You can send a DM to According to RP. Merlot is a very chill companion. So therefore, you will not get Twitter fingers from me. I will probably fall asleep on your ass. But Jose does definitely spark the fire. So if you're looking for a back and forth, maybe Paul might give it to you. And if you're looking for that, you can slip into my DM at According to RP on Gmail, or you can send a formal grievance, a formal email to accordingtorp@gmail.com. And with that being said, everyone, it's a wrap for this show. Thank you for tuning in and have a good night.
All right. Until next time, everybody.
You were listening to According to RP on WJ.